Hello and welcome to the As Yet Unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 12th of January 2014. My name's T.R.P. Watson and this week I'm joined by Gareth James and Rev Stan. We're now going to talk about Drawing the Line, which has just closed at the Hampstead Theatre. This is a play by Howard Brenton, directed by Howard Davis, and is kind of a second play that they've done at the Hampstead Theatre. They did 66 Days a couple of years ago, which was a big hit and was, I understand, was kind of due for a West End transfer, but the Olympics got in the way, caused a log jam, and then nobody was available. It does seem that the Hampstead Theatre wants to support these plays by Howard Brenton, which are rather ambitious. This one tells of Cyril Radcliffe. He's a High Court judge who gets sent to India with the task of partitioning it. In the late 1940s, the British had basically run out of money. The new Labour government was more concerned with what was going on at home than their colonial possessions, which they didn't particularly want anyway, and had really decided that they wanted to sort of draw away from India. They had accepted, and the principle of drawing away from India, I understand, had been accepted during the Second World War. They could have stayed, which would have been impossible. They could have just got out and just left the Indians up to their own devices, which probably would have caused a civil war and a massive bloodbath. Or they could attempt to partition, which is a partitioning between India as a whole and Pakistan, which was a notional Muslim homeland. It never really had accurate geographical borders, which is part of the problem that Mr. Cyril Radcliffe had to face. Another of the problems he has to face is he's never been to India, knows very little about the whole case for partition, and just has 6 weeks in which to do it. Very quickly, he finds it an absolutely hateful task. It is literally saying, at one point he says, "I've given Calcutta to the Hindus, how many people have I killed?" They're looking at hundreds of thousands of people are going to die, millions of people are going to be displaced, and really his only job is, and it's a completely thankless task, because even today people talk about the partition of India as if it's completely unnecessary and unfair and, you know, straight lines written by idiots. He just has to try to minimise the sheer number of deaths that are going to occur, and it really upset him. I mean, in real life, Cyril Radcliffe didn't accept the sort of money that he was offered for doing this job. This play, I think it's very well done, but I do think it's a bit of a really good history lesson. I wasn't entirely satisfied with the play, but it is very well played out by the cast. We've got Tom Beard playing Cyril Radcliffe, Paul Baisley playing Jinnah, Silas Carson playing Nehru. Jinnah is the head of the Muslim League, who's going to become the head of Pakistan, and Nehru is the head of the Indian Congress Party, and is destined to be the Prime Minister of India. But then we've got Andrew Havel as Mountbatten and John McKay as Clement Attlee. We also have Abigail Cruttendon as Antonia Radcliffe, and she's only seen in the scenes in Britain, as is John McKay's Clement Attlee. I mean, as I say, this is a good cast, John McKay and Abigail Cruttendon. I felt they were slightly underused because we don't see too much of them, and they are such good actors that it would have been nice to see all of it. It is a very complex story, and I think it's done extremely well, but I wasn't entirely sure, you know, how great a play it was. I just thought it was, as I say, a very, very good history lesson. What did you think about it, Gareth?
I enjoyed it very much. I mean, I take your point that it's, you know, it's a slice of history, a bit of a history lesson, but I mean, it is surprisingly light and surprisingly entertaining. And actually, you know, he does do a lot in the sort of less than 2 hours playing time, really, because it's about 2 hours and 10 minutes with interval. So I actually enjoyed it very much, and I particularly enjoyed it because it's a piece of history I don't really know much about. You know, we study history at school, but that kind of ended in my case in the beginning of the 20th century, and then, you know, I sort of became aware of events in the 60s, and the bit in between is all a bit of a mystery to me, really. So the Second World War and, you know, what happened in Europe after the Second World War and the partition of India are all kind of, you know, things I've had to pick up from sort of TV and films and whatever I've read. So actually, the Indian partition is something I didn't know much about. So I felt I learned a lot, and I'm assuming it is accurate. I thought it was done very well. I thought it was very well acted, very well staged. I think the one problem I have with it is that it isn't objective enough, really, I think, because it's a bit easy to just kind of follow this kind of populist revisionist sort of thing. It's all, you know, it's all the fault of the colonial powers, really. But if you think about, you know, what Ratcliffe had to do, it was an impossible task. I mean, there wasn't a right solution and there wasn't a viable alternative. So I don't think it gives enough airtime to that part of it, that, you know, that this was, you know, this was something that they were never, you know, they were never going to please everybody, really. And I think subsequent events have sort of shown that. So I think the one thing I would say about it is that there's a bit of colonialist bashing in it, which I think is a bit kind of dents its credibility a little bit, really. But I think it's good to see a theatre putting on a history play like this, good to see it done, you know, with such style. And Howard Brenton's, you know, in recent years has done a lot of things like this. I mean, in addition to, you mentioned, I think it was 55 Days, which I actually didn't like. The Charles II one, I think it was, wasn't it? But I did like Never So Good, the Macmillan years at the National. And I did like Ai Weiwei, which was also last year at the Hampstead as well. So I think he's, you know, he's doing a good job in sort of putting history on stage, really. So had it still been running, I'd be recommending it, but it actually finished, I think, and ended, as did Ai Weiwei, with a streaming, which I think is a great thing, that so many more people could see it by a free live streaming on the internet. So a good evening out for me.
Yeah, hopefully it's going to be made available. You do kind of hope that they will be there. Apparently, it won't be still available when this podcast comes out, but it was going to be available for 72 hours after the initial streaming, so basically over the weekend. I mean, it's a very good way of doing things, and hopefully it will have a life after that, because it is too good a play to miss, I think. Another thing that's just finished at the National Theatre's shed is Protest Song by Tim Price. This is a play about a rough sleeper who's slept for years outside St Paul's Cathedral and wakes up to find that the Occupy movement have suddenly turned up and there's a vast canvas city around him. This is a monologue where he talks about the reality of the Occupy movement, and Rhys Effans plays the rough sleeper Danny. Now, Gareth, you saw this. What did you think about it?
I think enjoy probably isn't the right word, but I was very, very glad I went to see it. I don't like monologues, as I think I've said on the podcast before, and I don't find them that dramatic, and therefore I do tend to avoid them. But Tim Price is a playwright that I'm quite interested in. He did the best out-of-town play of last year for me, The Radicalisation of Bradley Manning, toured a bit, but I saw it in Edinburgh. And Rhys Effans is a very good actor we don't see enough, I think, on stage. So those two things sort of drew me to break my no monologues rule. And in a way, the subject, I mean, Occupy London was something that did actually catch my imagination, and is something that I sort of do have views about. So I think all those three things together sort of got me there, really. As you say, I mean, he's a rough sleeper, and the play is actually more about homelessness and rough sleeping than it is about Occupy, in a way. And it's fascinating. Danny starts off by getting very angry that these guys have kind of invaded his space. And then, you know, there's a canteen there, so he's invited to take advantage of their hospitality, which, of course, is beneficial. Then he kind of works in the kitchen of this canteen, and he starts building relationships with these protesters and kind of enjoys the company, really. So he gets kind of drawn in. But then the camp becomes more of a society with its own rules, and that's the point at which he then sort of rebels against that and becomes more of an outcast, and his resentment kind of, he goes back to the beginning again and starts feeling that resentment. I think it's a very interesting piece of writing. The performance is I think exceptional. I mean, he prowls around the stage. I mean, it's hopefully not an insult to say that Rhys Effans doesn't have to do much to look like Danny the homeless guy, but he does more than that. I mean, he really kind of inhabits this role, and he kind of prowls around this black space. He talks directly to the audience, both as an audience but also individually, which is really effective and really well done. And it kind of stirs all sorts of emotions in you, really. I mean, at times you feel a lot of sympathy for this guy, but other times you're a bit repulsed by him, to be honest. And there's a kind of sense of hopelessness sometimes, and he's a bit scary. And he lightens that mood with some sort of funny stuff, some or most of which I can't really talk about because of the language that's used. And there's an incredible coup de théâtre ending, which I thought was incredibly effective and very chilling. So I thought it was a great use of the shed. I thought it was a good piece of writing and a particularly good performance. I wish it would get a longer run, really, because not that many people got to see it.
We're now going to talk about Coriolanus, which is on at the Donmar Warehouse.
this is Shakespeare's play, directed by Joseph Rourke and designed by Lucy Osborne. It has a good cast and almost a one hell of a cast because of the presence of Tom Hiddleston as Coriolanus. But he's ably supported, I think, by Deborah Findlay as Volumnia, his mother, Mark Gatiss as Medius A.E., who has a wonderful speech at the beginning talking about being the patricians being the belly of Rome, although he's such a gaunt figure, it's usually done by, I think, a slightly fatter actor, but he was very good. Hadley Fraser as Aufidius, the enemy of Hiddleston, sort of the opposite of Tom Hiddleston's Coriolanus. Birgit Hort Sorensen as Virgilia, Coriolanus's wife. This is not much of a part for her, but she is familiar if you've been watching Borgen on BBC4. We also have Peter Jersey as Commodus and Alfred Enoch as Titus Latius. They're the sort of friends of Coriolanus. And I was quite delighted by seeing these two because I like them a lot. Elliot Levy as Brutus and Helen Schlesinger as Sicinia. These are the tribunes appointed by the patricians to sort of keep the plebeians in order. In fact, they act as the plebeians' representatives and start taking over, which is part of, you know, something to do with the whole problems of in the play, and they cause much of the trouble in many ways. Gareth, tell me more about this play and what you thought about it.
Well, I think it's probably the best Coriolanus I've ever seen. I've seen some good Coriolanuses. I mean, I just think it's a very, very intelligent production, very imaginative and very thrilling. For me, it just kind of has you on the edge of the seat from beginning to end, really. I thought it was very, very gripping. And I think what's interesting, it's an interesting reading of the play because it seems to me to be less sympathetic to Coriolanus than the previous ones I've seen, in that it's also showing the fact, you know, he's a bit of a... He's got a propensity for tyrannical autocracy, whereas he's normally, I think, played more as a sort of vanilla hero, really. And I think it's a much more balanced kind of reading of the play. So you get the sort of, you know, you get both his scorn at the public reaction to him, but you also get the sort of, you understand the public's kind of nervousness about him as a potential tyrant. It's quite a political production, I think. But despite that, the sort of the mother-son relationship comes through incredibly strongly, more strongly than I think I've seen it before. And that's due to both the production, but also to the performances of both Tom Hiddleston and Deborah Findlay. I mean, there's so many sort of clever things about it. I mean, the opening food riot is very well staged, using projected graffiti, which is quite clever. The fight scenes, I thought, were really effective, and you kind of almost feel the blows. And the battle scenes, you know, you've got some sort of very clever small-scale battles with sort of one real ladder and lots of projected ladders. And then you get shocked by his banishment. I mean, it just, the disrespect kind of shocks you that they show to him. And then you've got very tender, you know, very tender moments with Volumnia, where she's sort of pleading to Coriolanus not to sort of to take Rome, as it were. So I thought it was a very, very well, you know, very, very clever production. I likened it in a way to the Macbeth at the Trafalgar Studios in its kind of physicality and its passion, and, you know, it had that kind of thrilling sense about it. So I likened it to that. And it's certainly not a star vehicle. I mean, he is terrific. He is absolutely terrific. But it's not a star vehicle because there are also lots of other great performances. I liked Mark Gatiss playing Menenius. I thought Hadley Fraser and the bearded Voluskians, great. Peter De Jersey was very good. And the sort of the sex-blind casting of Helen Schlesinger as one of the two tribunes, I thought, worked, as did Roshenda Sandal, who was a kind of one-woman crowd, really, who sort of, you know, almost explodes before your very eyes. So I thought this was a great reading of the play, supremely well acted, very well staged, you know, really simple design, but very effective. And if it's still got tickets for the screening, I think people should be rushing to see it on screen, because I think it's a very special evening for me.
Rustam, what did you think?
I second all of that, really. I was casting my mind back because I actually saw the very first performance, and I've got tickets to see the screening again, because you can't get tickets for this for love nor money, and I really want to see sort of how it's come on since that very first performance. I mean, the first performance was pretty polished, considering it was the first time they'd done it in front of an audience. I thought that it was a wonderful, fresh, contemporary approach. I've not seen Coriolanus on stage before, but I've seen film versions, and it can easily get very stodgy. I thought one of the great things about Tom Hiddleston, Hiddleston was the fact that he pushed through. There was a lot going on stage. You know, he gets water poured on him. There's things falling. He, you know, all sorts of things are happening. But he really pushes through with that performance, and you never lose sight of him as a character, which is something that I think can often go wrong with contemporary performances when they've got lots of loud music and projections and things going on. But I completely agree that it is an ensemble piece. There are some fantastic performances in there. Again, I really like the relationship between Coriolanus and his mother. I thought those scenes were absolutely cracking. And yeah, if go and see the screening, I would say the tickets are like absolute gold dust, but see the screening. It'd be interesting to see sort of how it's bedded in since that very first performance, which was very, very high energy.
Tom Hiddleston has attracted a lot of attention recently because of things like the Avengers films and Thor. He's got quite a fan base. Now, I understand, Gareth, that there have been one or two incidents, though not bad ones, I hope.
Well, there were lots of fans outside the theatre, and in particular when we left the theatre, and they were offering us money for our ticket stubs, which I thought was all a bit odd, and most of them seemed to be Asian and I think Japanese. But what pleased me about it, because it's one of we talked at the review of the year about the celebrity casting of Shakespeare, and I think it's kind of made Shakespeare quite cool and a hot ticket and given the West End quite a bit of buzz. What I liked about it on this occasion is that they were outside the theatre and you know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But in the theatre, they were really quiet, you know, and they were absolutely captivated by the play. And I thought that was just fantastic. That, you know, they might not have gone for Shakespeare, they might have gone for Hiddleston, but actually they seem to be thoroughly enjoying the experience of the play as well as seeing their hero, which I think is great.
I remember when there was a time when the critics particularly were a bit sniffy about star turns on stage, but there's all this emphasis now on getting sort of younger people involved in the theatre, and this is a classic way of doing it. I mean, Tom Hiddleston had a theatre career before he became this big film star, but if it's introducing people, and as Gareth says, you know, making younger people sort of find Shakespeare exciting and making them want to go and see it, then that surely is ticking a lot of boxes.
Yeah, and in the case of the Donmar, for not as much money as you normally pay in the West, so let's be honest. I mean, the Donmar is still, I think top price is still 35, and you can pay a lot less. So, I mean, it's also accessible, sexy Shakespeare, which is...
If you can get a ticket, that is.
But the problem is, because it's a small theatre, of course, it's like a nightmare to get a ticket. So.
We're now going to talk about Fortune's Fool, which is on at the Old Vic. This is a play by Ivan Turgenev, and in a version by Mike Poulton. The version was first done in the year 2000 on Broadway, when it starred Alan Bates and Frank Langella. The story is about a vast country estate where an aristocrat called Vasily Semyonich Kuzovkin has been sort of living there as a sort of a grace and favour resident. His own property has been tied up in a hopeless lawsuit, and he was treated as court jester to the previous owner, but the previous owner died, as did his wife, and he's sort of been living there alone since the daughter of the house was born. He helped bring up the daughter of the house, but she's gone off and he hasn't seen her for a number of years, and perhaps is worried that now she's returning with her new husband that she won't entirely remember him. He thinks he's probably going to have to move out, and he's very worried about it. And into this mix, when she comes back, comes the neighbour of the neighbour to this great estate, Trapachov, who hates poverty and disdains Vasily Kuzovkin, and makes him drink too much, at which point Vasily reveals something and reveals a deep dark secret, and everything changes. I thought this play when we saw it with Ian Glen and Rich McCabe as the poor relation and the neighbour, I thought it was well done, but I did think this was a rather empty production. It's directed by Lucy Bailey, and it's a very nicely done production. It looks very nice. I was reminded just how great an actor Ian Glen is and how much I like seeing him in things. Unfortunately, he's now ill, and his role is being done by his understudy, but will be taken over by William Houston for the rest of the run. William Houston, of course, played the doctor to Ian Glen's Uncle Vanya in a print room production of Uncle Vanya a year or so ago, which was very, very well received and very, very well worth watching. So they have a sort of a history together. I was impressed by the acting of this, but I did, found the whole thing a little bit empty. It's a bit showy. I mean, Richard McCabe is doing this deeply arrogant and nasty man as the neighbour, and he does it very well. But I didn't find the experience really. Yeah, as I say, I think empty is about the only word I can really use. It's a nice story. It passes the time, but I kind of wondered what all the fuss was about. What do you think about it, Rev Stan?
I absolutely loved this play. It feels like a real hidden gem. I was unfamiliar, didn't know. Well, I didn't have any expectations. I mean, I love Ian Glen, which was the draw for me. And I just felt like you were taken on a real emotional roller coaster. There were times when he was being abused in a sort of very cruel, bullying way, which just really, really rattled me, to the sort of the big reveal and sort of what was going on behind the scenes. And there's some really emotional scenes towards the end. I can't go into any more detail without spoiling the story, because you need that big reveal. I just thought it was a bit of a tour de force of emotion, really, in a completely unexpected way. It was very larger than life to start with. You thought you knew sort of what time to play it was going to be, and then it has this real emotional punch towards the end, and I loved it. I was trying to squeeze it into my top 10 for last year, and I couldn't quite squeeze it in, unfortunately, but it got an honourable mention. Fantastic performance. It's a shame that Ian Glen isn't in it anymore, because he was absolutely superb. But great performances all round. It reminded me a little bit of, you talking about sort of like some of the bigger performances, I actually like that. It reminded me a little bit of a Dickens novel, when you have sort of these larger than life characters, very colourful characters, very rich characters. And I really like that. I like the fact that they were larger than life. They were very colourful, but underneath it, you've got this really deep emotional story going through it. Again, almost like a Dickens novel. Some of those various threads that come together towards the end. So I really enjoyed it. I'd be interested to see what it's like with the understudy, or with whoever's replacing Ian Glen. But yeah, definitely, I put it on my to watch list. Definitely.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.